Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I want to know, how do you feel about that? Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I friggin' love nerding out about communication.
It's so good. Meta-communication, as they say. I really feel like learning about communication has improved my life so much more than I even thought it would.
It's
skills that I use every day and sometimes don't even notice that I'm using. It's very, very good.
Yeah, my degree was in communication, and, like, I graduated and was like, the fuck am I gonna do with this? Like, ugh. And then I was like, oh, wait, I'm really good at that now. And I will use that everywhere, all the time. Like, I just got a review at my day job, and my boss was like, you are a phenomenal communicator. You have empathy where, like, no one else on the staff does, and talking to you about that empathy has, like, made me a better manager. And I was like, heh, okay. Sure. I guess I do use this skill.
I've, like, never really asked you about that program that you went to. Like, what did you learn from studying communication that is still useful to you now?
So what's cool is that school did not have a great theater program, which means mm-hmm. theater was just hidden in the communications department. So I took mm-hmm. a lot of, like, improv classes and, like, little theater classes for fun. So that really helped. And I did a couple of public speaking courses, which is what I use all the time in my workshops. And then a couple of courses on just, like, I've done interpersonal communication and nonverbal stuff. So I did a whole semester just studying nonverbal language. And, like, we did a whole class on where you're sitting in the room and what that says about how comfortable you are in the room and your surroundings and stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, I often talked about it as being a psych degree without the science. Because it was all about just learning how to understand people and how to craft your language to, like, better get understanding across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And things. It was really fascinating. It was communications is basically the study of people.
Right. I love how before we started recording this episode, you were like, I don't think I'm going to have very much to say. But you fucking studied the topic of today's episode. So, like, maybe you do, friend?
Maybe.
Maybe you're selling yourself a little short?
Maybe. Maybe I have some stuff to say. And what's cool about my degree is I thought I was going to go for education. So I had 2 years of an education degree and 2 years of a communications degree. Which is, mm-hmm. like, the perfect sex educator startup if I just go and get my master's in sex education. And when I have dollars, that might happen.
You use that, like, vanilla degree now to teach people about blowjobs and dirty talk and stuff. It's
wonderful. Yeah, because I had a degree, and then I was like, I can't man a class of kids. So now I just teach grown-ups.
I feel so subversive every time I use stuff I learned in journalism school for nefarious purposes in my career as a sex media maker. I'm like, haha, you taught me how to use Adobe Audition, and now I'm using it to edit podcasts about spanking and dicks. Wonderful. Okay, so today we're talking about communication, but specifically about loving communication, because I don't really want to have a whole episode about arguing and yelling at people. That doesn't sound fun to me. I guess we could do
honestly,
that sometime.
I think
arguing is itself a skill set.
Yeah, and I think you can lovingly argue. Like, I don't think those are mutually exclusive.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Okay, so what does it mean to communicate lovingly? I said that a little bit like William Shatner, and I'm into it.
I think it means to communicate with intention and with clarity and with empathy. I think those are, like,
good words.
Three key parts of, yeah, I read your questions and actually prepped. Well, I read the first one and prepped.
Oh my god. We communicated lovingly and it worked well.
It did.
I'm so proud of us. Amazing. Okay, clarity, though. I'm curious about that. Why is it loving to communicate with clarity?
So that's something I learned in a workshop with Dr. Ruthie at Sex Down South called Lovingly Objectified. And it was about, or loving objectification, something along those lines. But the idea was how to do objectification play in a way that isn't humiliating. And it can be humiliating, and that's fun, but this was more about how to do it in a way that's more nurturing and caretaking. And part of that is being really clear in the instructions you want. Because if you expect to get something out of a person or get something from a person, you need to be really clear on exactly what that is. As a service-oriented person, that kind of clarity is loving for me because it means I can serve better and know exactly what is required of me to be successful.
Yeah, I was interested when you said that because it reminded me of things I've read from one of my favorite writers, Alexandra Franzen, who's a big communication nerd, and she is all about clarity. And for her, it's because it's kind, she feels, to not waste people's time by being ambiguous.
Yeah.
And to set boundaries very clearly up front, which, like, can be potentially more hurtful or jarring if you just set them right up front, but it saves a lot of harm in the long run. And I found that a really helpful concept, especially as, like, a person who was socialized as female and is, like, really bad at being assertive and, like, stating plainly what I need from people. It's been a useful skill to learn.
And that kind of comes back to even how I talk about, like, in your dating profile, making the things you're scared about super visible and the first thing up there. Because then the people who are going to give you shit are going to self-select out of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, sometimes I get a little sad when I add something new into my Tinder bio and it results in, like, far fewer matches. But if it's things like polyamorous or, like, feminist or whatever, it's like, I don't really need to be sad about losing all those bros who are not down for that. So it's fine.
Yeah.
So how do you like to show love in your communication? Do you have any, like, tips and tricks to share around communicating kindly?
I think the biggest thing is empathy, right? Recognizing how I'd like to hear that and recognizing where the other person in the scenario is coming from. And recognizing if we disagree on something, well, why do they believe what they believe, right? And coming at it from that perspective, I think is a really good way to make sure you're communicating in a way that is loving.
Yeah, I read this thing somewhere. I think it might have been on the Our Relationships subreddit, which is just like a hotbed of like vitriol and wisdom. But someone said that you should, when you're having a conflict in a relationship or a friendship or whatever, you should not think of it as like me versus you. You should think of it as us versus the problem. And that was a really, really useful lesson for me to learn and to internalize. And I think about that all the time. Because it often is, like, us versus the problem. Like, and the problem is often, like, some kind of, like, miscommunication or, like, a lack of empathy or a lack of understanding of context of where the other person is coming from or something.
That's how Joelle and Nadi talks about living with someone with depression. Is the same idea, not me versus them, but us versus the depression.
Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at that, too, because, like, I definitely know people who, like, get frustrated with their partner who's depressed when, like, that doesn't solve anything and also, like, isn't a kind way of approaching that issue. Like, you don't get mad at someone who's physically sick for being sick.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't get mad at your partner with diabetes for not going to the bakery with you. Like...
Right. Yeah. I mean, they can go. They just won't have anything.
Yeah, but that's depressing. Rude, like,
yeah.
And we're back to depression.
Don't do that. Yeah. Well, I think one of the places that I learned a lot about loving communication was I used to volunteer for this organization here in Toronto called the LGBT Youth Line, which is like a hotline that queer youth can call and just talk about stuff and get emotional support on issues and like referrals to resources and stuff. And we had to go through training on like basically active listening Which is also a really useful skill for me as a journalist, because, like, sources want to know that you're listening to them and paying attention and really absorbing what they're saying. And a lot of what I learned at the Youthline training was how useful it is to just basically, like, restate back to someone what they've just told you about how they're feeling. Like, just basically be like, wow, that sounds really frustrating, or, like, sounds like you're really upset about that, or that would be hurtful if that happened to me. Like, and it's weird because as the person saying that, I often feel like, what's even the point of saying this? Like, they know this. Like, they've just said this to me. You know, it doesn't feel like I'm doing very much. But often when I talk to someone else about my problems and they do that and mirror my feelings back to me, it is really helpful because it's almost like it gives you permission to be feeling the thing that you're feeling. And it gives words to it that maybe you didn't quite put to it yet. It's weirdly helpful for me.
Yeah, well, and it allows you to process it, right? Because if that other person makes a guess about how you're feeling, it can be validating, mm-hmm. but also if they're wrong, it gives you a chance to kind of clarify and find language for how you're actually feeling.
Right.
Which is super helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm recently medicated, and every time I go and kind of discuss how the medication makes me feel or how my body makes me feel sometimes, it's been fascinating to sit and find the most precise language I can to describe it so that people understand and can treat me effectively. But just finding the language or answering their questions, and the division might be as simple as, like, am I feeling embarrassment or am I feeling shame? Right? Those are similar but different feelings. And it's really interesting to kind of tease that apart and find out what feelings I'm feeling, and also what's related to what's happening in life versus what's happening in my brain.
Yeah, what you just said reminded me of a thing from the podcast, The Turnaround, which is about interviewing skills. But there's a part where Jesse Thorne asks Ira Glass, like a great interviewer, about tricks he uses. And Ira says sometimes he will state what he thinks the takeaway is from what the person has just said. Like, sounds like you were feeling really frustrated. And, like, maybe, like you said, they will be like, no, that's actually not quite right. Here's what I actually felt like. And it helps you clarify and move things along. And it also, like, shows that you were actually listening and, like, engaged with what they were saying. Like, it's better than just kind of being like, interesting.
Yeah.
Which is so frustrating when someone, like, has no response to what you're saying.
There are definitely times when, like, I have gone back through conversations to be like, which enthusiastic response haven't I used yet? And I'm like, I am not engaged in this conversation at all, but... And that's...
Yeah, no.
That's kind of the difference, I think.
Yeah, sometimes if I don't know what to say to someone who's just, like, telling me something that happened, I'll kind of just, like, go into journalist mode a little bit and just sort of ask them follow-up questions. Even if, like, I think I kind of know the answer, like, it might be stuff like, well, how did you feel about that? Or, like, is that what you thought was going to happen? Or, like, how did you wish that that had gone differently? Because that can kind of help them, like, pick apart what they're feeling and what happened and process things. And I find that really helpful when people do that for me. How else do you like to receive love in communication? Like, what do you like when people do?
I really appreciate specificity. So, like, I want to know it's specifically directed at me and something that I did or said or am or whatever. So I want not, like, some generic something or other, whether it's a compliment or just part of a conversation or an answer to something that I've disclosed or whatever, something that is specific to me and specific to the situation, I think is really helpful, and something unique, not the same thing that I hear that person say all the time.
Yeah. You mentioned compliments, which is something that I love to talk about. I think, like, as a person who makes media on the internet about sex, like, I receive probably a higher volume of compliments than the average person, because, like, there's just a lot of, like, sexualized compliments a lot of the time. But so I guess, like, I spent a lot of time thinking about, like, what is a good compliment and what is a bad compliment. What's your take on that? How do you give a good compliment?
Usually, again, it's that specificity, and I do it based on something that that person does, not based on something that they are.
Oh, interesting. Tell me
something
more.
Something that they intentionally did. Did they change their hair? Did they work on a project? Did they, something that they chose versus like, you know, I really like your eyes. Like, they've had those eyes their whole life. They didn't choose those eyes.
Yeah.
Like, that could be a good compliment, but I think complimenting more specifically on something that they're probably proud of because they created it.
Yeah.
I think I got that from Liz Powell.
Yeah, I agree. That's a really good thing to sort of look for, where somebody puts their effort and energy, because that's probably what they would most value being complimented on.
Yeah.
And I also think it's important to look for things that they, like you said, don't often get complimented on, which is something I learned because, like, when I was growing up, I felt like I was very physically unattractive, and I was told all the time that I was smart, and I was praised for my intelligence, and I had this best friend who was very, like, conventionally beautiful, and she was told all the time how beautiful she was, but she never got told, like, how smart she was or how funny or whatever, even though she was those things. And I saw the ways that, like, both of us kind of grew to almost resent those compliments because we just were getting them all the time. It made me feel like I wasn't beautiful. It made her feel like she wasn't smart. And we kind of, like, started to, like, resent each other for that. And it's shitty. Like, you know, I totally understand why you would compliment someone on, like, the first thing that you notice about them. But it's probably also the first thing that a lot of people notice about them. So if you look a little bit deeper, you can see something that they maybe care more about, and that's going to light them up more if you compliment them on it.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, like you were saying about specificity, like, specific language is good. Like, there's so many words that we hear all the time. Like, I hear beautiful a lot, and it's like, it's very nice. It's a very, very nice compliment to receive, but it's just like that word is so overused in our culture that it's almost like lost its impact. So it really sticks with me when people choose kind of more, like, specific, intentional language. I'm also a big fan of great adjectives because I'm a writer, so there's that.
I also think looking at the language someone uses about themselves and extrapolating from there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I've been called sexy, and, like, that's a word that feels weird to describe me. Like, I guess it's true, but, like, it's not a word that's ever resonated with me.
Yeah.
Especially for a while because I related it to femininity.
Right.
Because if I was a girl, that's what sexy looked like.
Right.
And, spoilers, not a girl. and, like, maybe I will be able to reclaim that word in the way I've reclaimed other words that, like, when no longer paired with femininity, make more sense for me. Mm-hmm. Like, even bisexuality. There is an image of the bisexual girl that, like, you know, doesn't make sense, but never resonated with me either. And I thought it was because of bisexuality not resonating with me, but it was the other way around.
Yeah.
And I think paying attention to the language they use, because there are plenty of things that you may think is a compliment that could land really weird for them.
Yes. And I think also, like, if you're in an ongoing relationship of some sort with someone, you can check in about the language that you're using and see how it's landing. I mean, you can do that with shorter term people as well, I guess. It's just sort of less socially accepted usually. But one that I came up against recently is, like, my boyfriend is, I think, very attractive in a way that is sort of androgynous at times, or at least that's how I perceive it. And so I sometimes was calling him words like pretty and beautiful because they just felt accurate and right to me. But, like, because those words are obviously, like, very coded as feminine, I was, like, checking in a lot. I was like, is this making you feel weird? Like, I won't call you that if you don't like it. And he was into it, so it was fine. But yeah, like, especially around, like, gendered words or words that are associated with other things or strongly coded, like, you want to check in about that stuff. So one concept that's been really useful to me in communication in all my relationships is the concept of love languages, which, like, I don't know how much, like, scientific backing there is to this. Like, I don't know if they've, like, done studies to determine if there actually is, like, backing to the idea that we each have a love language that, like, we prefer to give and receive love in these particular ways. But even if it's not, like, scientifically accurate or whatever, I've found it a helpful framework for patching up miscommunications between partners that sometimes happen, and even, like, with friends, too. So tell me about the love languages. What is this system?
So it's a system by Dr. Gary Chapman, who wrote a book full of religious shit, but also some useful things about very Christian, I think. But wrote about these five love languages about how people give and receive affection and how they feel it best. Giving gifts, quality time, words of affirmation, physical touch,
right? And acts of service.
How did I forget the service one?
I don't know.
Because, like, it me.
Yeah, it totally you.
I remembered all the ones that are not me.
Yeah. There are, like, quizzes online that you can take that will tell you which one of these love languages is your strongest, but I feel like most people intuitively have some sense for which one of them resonates the most. And, like, for me, for example, like, I knew instantly as soon as I heard about this framework that words of affirmation was absolutely my number one. And every time I've taken the test, it has shown that, and then second place is always physical touch, and everything else is kind of trailing. What do you tend to get?
It's super interesting to me because I tend to be more evenly split between them. Like, I don't have one that's, like, super prevalent. I give love through acts of service, which for me means a lot of things. Sometimes means gift giving. Sometimes means, like, physical touch, you know? So I do the other ones, but it's always through this lens of service. And I think with that service, I tend to recognize the way other people show love and just kind of receive it through that. I think words of affirmation are really affirming for me, are really good for me, because I think they're the least ambiguous of them. And that kind of clarity and communication is really helpful for me. But I like gifts as well, not because I like getting shit, which I do, but because it shows what someone knows about me. Or at least, and that's also why I like giving gifts. I like giving creative gifts that kind of show how well I know someone.
Yeah.
But those are all things through this lens of service, right? So I don't know that there's one that is super, like, very clearly obvious for me in the way it is for a lot of people.
Yeah, I would be interested to know if anyone's done any work or writing on how the love languages intersect with kink stuff.
Yeah.
Because, like, for me, a lot of my kinks are wrapped up in words. Like, I'm very into being praised and into dirty talk and stuff like that. So it kind of makes sense. But I wonder, like, because service is so big for you and your kinks, I wonder, like, what the crossover, like, if people tend to have the same kind of kink language, so to speak, as their love language. But I found this a really useful tool when I was dating someone whose love language was, like, very, very different from mine. He was, like, more into, like, gift giving and, quality time and acts of service, which is, like, very nice, but, for me, 'cause, like, I'm so oriented around words, like, it just doesn't feel like someone is expressing love to me unless they do it in the ways that I best receive it. And you can, like, kind of reorient your thinking around that. Like, you can, like, remind yourself continually, like, this is how this person shows love. But it's really hard to do that. So I explained to him, like, I'm very, like, linguistically oriented. Here are some ways that you can, you know, express your appreciation to me in words. And I did see him, like, adjusting his approach around that. I wasn't as sure how to adjust my approach to, like, better fit him. Because in my mind, like, we were already spending quality time together. I didn't know how to, like, make that more loving than it already was. But, yeah, that's something to work on. Do you think that people with different love languages can still work together?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's well, and I say that as someone who doesn't feel super strongly in any direction with the love languages.
Right.
So I think it's relatively easy, at least for me, to kind of adapt accordingly.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that's easy for everyone. I think having the language around love languages is, and being able to say, hey, this is how I feel love, is kind of the first step in that.
Yeah.
Because if you're not talking about it, then no, I don't think that that will work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, there's like a lot of like compromise issues that come up in relationships where like basically it comes down to like how far are we willing to compromise and like how well are we able to pull it off? Because like, I can tell someone that I want them to compliment me more and, like, write me more, like, loving texts and stuff, and maybe they'll pick that up and maybe they'll start doing that well, but, like, if it's, like, a big effort for them and an inconvenience to them to do that over time, then probably we're not going to last very long.
I also think it's sometimes hard to ask for what you need around these love languages.
Yeah.
Because, like, acts of service are my love language. I need you to do things for me. I need you to give me presents. I need you to tell me how great I am. Can you do all of those things? Like, it can be really hard to kind of express that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're doing it from a place of, this is how I think we would interact better through this level of communication, but it's still hard, and I think the helpful first thing is to say, hey, here's all this information I have about love languages. Where do you feel like you fall? What are your love languages? Oh, here's where I think I fall.
Hmm.
And I think opening that conversation by asking about them first can make it a lot less scary.
Yes. And I think also you can use like positive reinforcement type stuff. Like if they do a thing that you really like an act of service type thing or something, you can say, I really liked when you did that. It made me feel really loved because XYZ. And they, if they're paying attention, will, you know, notice and remember that and maybe do more stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think, I was going to say, and if they really care about the relationship, they would be paying attention, but that's not entirely true, I don't think. I think some people wouldn't get little hints like that, and some people need that kind of clarity around communication of, hey, this doesn't work for me, this might.
Yeah.
You know, I think it really depends on the person more than, like, their level of care for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're dropping those hints and they're not getting it, I think, I mean, you don't owe it to anyone, but I think it would be helpful to give them a chance to kind of convey that in a different way or to make the effort.
Yeah, that's been a really useful lesson for me in terms of loving communication is, like, figuring out that not everybody's brain works like mine does. Which seems really obvious, but, like, it actually takes a lot of kind of cognitive and emotional work for some people to get to a point where they can recognize that not everybody's brain works like theirs. Like, when I start dating someone and really like them, I get a little bit, like, obsessed with them, and I want to, like, Google them a lot and, like, learn everything about them and, like, always know what they're up to and stuff. And when I've dated people who were very much not like that, who were more like kind of hands off, chill, cool, it was very, very hard for me to understand that as them being into me. Like, I just saw that and was like, oh, well, clearly they're not that interested in me because they're not behaving how I behave when I'm interested in someone. And that's not always the case. Like, different people express that stuff in different ways. So, like, that's one lesson I've really picked up from love languages is, like, someone can still be into you even if it doesn't look the way you look when you're into someone. You just got to kind of get to know them and figure out how to read that.
Yeah. So if there was a sixth love languages, if there was a sixth love language, where do you think the gap is in that? What other ways do you like to feel love?
Oh.
I mean, memes are a love language sometimes. I think it falls with, like, gift-giving, but I think in the internet age that can be different, and just, like, recognizing what someone would find funny or interesting, or sending an article or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, all I'm thinking about is stuff where, like, you know the person so well that you can, like, maybe recommend media or recommend experiences that they might enjoy, which, like, depending on how that manifests, that can fall into, like, acts of service or quality time or gifts.
I was
thinking about this last night because I was having a conversation about this ex-boyfriend of mine who was a game developer who, one thing I really, really treasured about him is that if I was like, hey, I'm bored, what's a video game that I personally would love? He would always have a recommendation on tap, and I would almost always love it because he just knew me that well. Although words of affirmation is, like, very much my first love language, anything where a person demonstrates that they know me really well is, like, both really comforting and nice and really hot to me. So yeah. I love that shit. Okay. What do you wish more people did in terms of communication?
Talked about how they communicate.
Ooh. So, like, what's a way to get into that conversation? Like, how do you, like, bring that up with someone?
The same way I bring up most things, which is, so I read an article.
It's so smart.
Or, so I was thinking about the other day. Or, I realized that this is the thing I do in communication. What do you think you do?
Mm.
Or even just before a conversation, kind of setting the parameters for communication or how you think that conversation would go better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily, like, creating all these rules and hoops that your partner has to jump through, but just communicating around what would be most helpful in progressing that conversation for everyone involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reminds me of something I learned from Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, which is kind of dated at this point. It's a little binaristic and success.
Did I move to Mars? That word. Did I get a rocket ship and just, like, fly over to Mars? You know, I hear the climate's better here. I'm all about that fire.
So, if I recall correctly, there's an entire chapter about how when women talk about their problems, they often just want to vent and get it off their chest, and men tend to jump to giving advice or trying to solve the problem. Which, like, in my experience, that isn't really a gendered issue. There are some people who are just inclined toward giving advice and problem solving, and some people who don't want that for whatever reason.
I am problem solving driven, so I became a dude.
That's how gender works, yeah. But so, like, the advice that they recommend is basically, like, if you are the person who just wants to vent and talk about your problem, to state that up front to the problem solving person that you're talking to and be like, hey, I just want to talk about this thing. I don't need solutions. Just, like, hear me out on this. And you can do that with almost any type of conversation. Like, you can state up front what kind of feedback you're looking for, if any, or what kind of support you need around what you're talking about or whatever. Or you can, if you have something awkward to bring up with a partner, you can be like, hey, like, I'm really uncomfortable or nervous about bringing this up. I'm worried that you'll react in this way. And that's a kind of, like, meta communication setup for what you're about to say, which I find makes it a lot easier to say the actual difficult thing.
Yeah, Kate Kenfield talks about this a lot from the other perspective of, as someone receiving communication, one of her favorite questions for people to ask her is, are you looking for empathy or strategy?
Oh, so good.
It kind of, as someone, as a Virgo who is always problem-solving driven, is always like, hi, let me give you advice. I have opinions about everything. I think it's really helpful to pause and take a breath and, like, really ask what they're looking for in the situation. And I don't always do that fast enough. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes I'm halfway through advice and I'm like, oh, shit, you didn't even ask for this, so I'm gonna shut up until you do. And, like, catching it later is helpful. Not doing it in the first place is more helpful. But it's a process. We'll get there.
Mm-hmm. I think also it can depend on how well you know the person. Because, like, with you and me, like, if I'm complaining to you about a problem, I feel like you have a pretty good sense usually for whether I'm looking for advice or not, just like based on our history and context and everything. But like often, like on Twitter, for example, if I like complain about an issue I'm having, people will jump in with unsolicited advice. And it's often like, this is a problem that I have lived with, whether it's like chronic pain issues or a relationship issue or something. Like, I am the one living with this problem. So like, I'm the one probably who's like tried stuff and like knows what I've tried and knows what I haven't tried and knows, you know, better than a random Twitter stranger what might or might not work to solve this problem. So it really frustrates me when people jump in with the unsolicited advice, because it's like, you do not have any of the context that you would need in order to offer actually useful advice. You don't even know whether I need or want advice. And it's, yeah, it's very frustrating.
You have 240 characters of information.
Yep. My fave is like when I complain about a pain issue and people are like, you should go to the doctor. And I'm like, I have been to the doctor. That's why I know it's a chronic pain issue.
Like you're going to be like, oh shit, there are doctors. Fuck, I forgot. Ah.
I forgot I could get medical advice on my medical issue. Jeez.
And they're saying this to the Canadian. You could just go. Like, saying that to American is rude for an entirely different reason.
Yeah.
But still, like you're gonna forget that there's a guy waiting in a room somewhere to give you advice on this exact issue.
Sometimes when I complain about pain things... Or
not necessarily a guy. That was a shitty thing for me to say. There is a person waiting in a room.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
It was the royal guy.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious when I complain about a pain issue and people are like, you should try smoking weed for that. And I'm like, oh, I've heard of it. Like, I'm familiar.
Hello, I am high. right now. I think one of the interesting things you said is that you get a lot of unsolicited feedback on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think text-based communication is especially problematic. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be really hard to communicate with more clarity in that way. Do you have kind of any tips around that?
Yeah, I actually think emojis have been an enormous step forward in this area. And like, it sounds kind of jokey because like they're little cartoon images, whatever. Like, people still make fun of folks for using emojis sometimes, like they're like unprofessional or something. But they really add an element of like humanity and readability to textual communication that otherwise is really hard to convey. Like, you know, an emoji can completely change the meaning of your sentence. So especially if I'm having a difficult conversation or sending a text that I think could be misconstrued really easily, I will rely heavily on emojis, which of course relies on certain technical things. Like, if, you know, if you're texting someone who doesn't have an up-to-date phone, then maybe that's not going to work so well. I also think if I need to have a difficult conversation, I'm going to weigh and try to figure out if it's better to have it in a real-time method, like over the phone versus via text. But I'm also, I'm not entirely on board with people who are like, all difficult conversations should not happen via text, because I think, especially for people with anxiety or other issues that make communication difficult when you're at the heights of your emotions, it can be much easier to have those conversations via text sometimes, because you have the time to kind of like put your thoughts together and phrase them exactly the way you want to. And you don't have that anxiety weighing on you that maybe is going to make it so you don't say the things that you actually need to say, or you say them in a way that you didn't mean to say them. So sometimes I'll like to sort of like bring up the difficult issue via text, and maybe if we need to have another clarifying conversation about the issue, we could do that not via text. But yeah, you got to kind of read your audience on that one, because some people really prefer to have those conversations via text, and some people really do not and need to be face to face with you, or like maybe touching you or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I definitely agree with what you said about emojis. I think they're almost like modern day punctuation at this point.
Yeah.
And I think they offer a lot of insight, especially in like text conversation and stuff. Mm-hmm. I have gotten better at having the conversations in person. There was like, rather than leaning on text, because I have miscommunicated via text way too many times. So I definitely lean towards having those conversations through some sort of medium where you can at least, like, talk to each other. Or, like, real-time talk to each other.
Yeah.
I think that's super helpful.
Mm-hmm. I also think Clementine Morrigan, the writer, was talking about this on Facebook recently, about, like, when you get those little indicators that someone is typing...
yeah.
They have started waiting until the person finishes what they're saying before they jump in with the next thing that they're going to say, and they consider it like the textual equivalent of like not interrupting someone while you're talking to them, and that's like pretty simple, but it's I do find that really helpful, because if you kind of like interrupt someone midstream during a text convo, like, it can throw things off and points can be missed and things can get out of hand really quickly. So yeah, that's like a useful tool, is to have that little indicator that someone's typing, because it gives you a lot of conversational information.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also think in some ways, like, having a textual record of your conversation can sometimes be good, but I also think sometimes people will like use that in bad ways. Like, they'll go back and be like, well, you said this thing before, and they'll like directly quote it to you, and that can like sometimes not leave room for the fact that, like, you know, our opinions and ideas evolve, and also like maybe you didn't say exactly what you meant because maybe you were flustered or rushed or mistyped or something. So I think if we're using textual communication or another method that like has a physical record of what was said, you need to sort of take it with a grain of salt and understand that, like, the person's feelings may have changed, and like not be vindictive about it, you know?
Yeah.
Something I think about a lot with regards to communication, especially with like total strangers, is this idea I learned from minoring in psychology. I think it's called the fundamental attribution error. I might be totally wrong. Don't at me. But it's basically the idea that, like, if we do something shitty, we tend to explain it away and be like, well, like, I did it because of all these circumstances, like, I was having a bad day, I was in a rush, whatever. But if we see someone else do something shitty, we tend to assume it's because they're a shitty person, basically. Like, we don't take into account all the context that might have caused them to do this shitty thing. You know, like, if someone's, like, honking at you in traffic, you might just assume they're an asshole, but, like, maybe they're in a rush because of some family thing that's happening or whatever. So I try really hard to keep in mind that everybody has their own shit going on and everybody's having some kind of day, and like, you don't know what their situation is. I heard a really great story about this recently. Actually, my aunt was telling me this story that she was like in traffic, and there was this person ahead of her who was like, had their turn signal, their turn signal on, was not turning. It was just like taking forever. And she was like honking and like getting kind of pissed off, and she like drove up beside the person, and then she realized that this person was trying to turn into a funeral home and was just like crying because she was like on her way to a funeral, I guess. And so like my aunt like said that this story like really affected her and really made her start thinking about like people's context and like how you gotta like give people some slack because you don't know what's going on with them. How do you like lovingly communicate with people more generally, not just like friends and partners?
I think it is with like that level of empathy, mm-hmm. And kind of understanding. And I think it's very similar in the tools that we use now, maybe with, I mean, you're not able to really ask them necessarily how to communicate with them, because they're strangers, and that's, you know, you don't walk up to someone in the grocery store and be like, hey, so, how can I communicate with you? But I think you can ask, like, simpler questions like, hey, can I give you a compliment? Or, like, if you're, you know, if you see someone on the internet complaining about a thing, hey, are you looking for advice on this? And just before you jump in with information, just asking, like, hey, is this what you're looking for right now? Would this be helpful right now?
Yeah, I think what's also really helped me is kind of this like journalistic attitude of being curious about and interested in people generally. Because it's a nice feeling to have someone be interested in and curious about you. You don't want to be, like, rude about it because, like, you know, it's kind of weird to, like, ask someone a bunch of questions about themselves in, like, the grocery checkout line or whatever. But I often think of Justin McElroy saying that if he is at a party and he finds himself talking to someone who he doesn't know and, like, doesn't know how to navigate the conversation really, he'll, like, find something that they know a lot about and, like, ask them a whole bunch of stuff about that. Because that makes people feel smart and great. And I think if you can, like, create this, like, snow globe-y little interaction, even with someone you don't know that well, where they feel really focused on and listened to, you can, like, make their whole day or their whole week or whatever. And it's, like, it doesn't even take that much effort, really, and it can have great results.
Yeah, I hate getting my hair cut because of all the because of gender reasons, but also because you're just sitting there for a minute, for, like, a few minutes with small talk happening, like maybe 15, 30 minutes, whatever, however long your hair takes. And you're just kind of sitting there with someone touching your head, and you can't really ignore them because they're touching your head.
Right.
So recently I went and just asked this person a bunch of questions about, like, where did you learn this? Where, like, how long have you been doing this? Like, blah, blah, blah. And now I know a whole bunch about this person. And it was really fascinating, but also it meant I didn't have to come up with small talk. Mm-hmm. I just got to ask a question and let them kind of go.
Yeah. Yeah, some of my favorites for that is, like, if you find out what someone's job is, you can ask them, like, what's the best thing and the worst thing about your job? Or, like, how did you get into that? And those are, like, very simple questions, but, like, most people have pretty interesting answers to those questions, even if you don't think that their job is that interesting. So, yeah, it's good stuff. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Dildorks. These were some big, interesting chats. I have lots to implement in my life now. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. I'm also really excited because I have a piece in the new issue of The Walrus, which is this big, fancy literary magazine here in Canada. They asked me to write an essay about what I think the future of sex will look like, which is a big responsibility to be like, hey, Kate, tell us what the future of sex is going to be. But I pitched them a few things, and the one that they wanted was this piece about sex robots and how I think sex robots will affect our sexual culture. So I wrote this essay about that. It's in the new issue, The Walrus. Pick it up. It's a beautiful magazine. There's lots of good smart shit in there, and also me talking about touching sex robots' clits. So, yeah. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at bextalksex.com. This month I'm doing a roundup on how I have changed over the last year on testosterone. So, like, that's interesting. Go check that out. I've also got a couple of speaking gigs coming up in the next couple of months. On this coming Sunday, the 20th, I'm going to be at Consider This Conference in Brooklyn. If y'all are located in Brooklyn, come on out. I'm going to be on a panel on toxic masculinity with two other rad folks. If you're not in New York City or Brooklyn, or local at all, you can live stream the conference from home. So that's at feblue.com, efflue.com/consider this. They have all the information there. I'm also going to be teaching at Dark Odyssey Fusion, which is June 19th through 25th at a campsite in Maryland. That's at darkodyssey.com/fusion. I'm going to be teaching 4 workshops there. So I'm doing long distance kink, communication and negotiation for nerds and pervs, which I'm really excited about. I'm teaching blowjobs and I'm teaching about G-spots. Also, if you're interested in that communication workshop, I'm teaching it on Monday the 21st in New York City. Go to fetlife.com and look up TNG. That's the group I'm going to be teaching with. And finally, I'm going to be at Sex Down South. That's September 6th through 8th down in Atlanta. So come on out for one of those events if you want to see me teach. I'm really excited to start doing a lot more of that.
You are so busy, and I am so proud.
Together we're the Dildorks. We're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram and at thedildorks.com. This week, tweet at us with your favorite tip for loving communication. If you want to support us, you can search for us in your favorite podcast app and rate and review us. 5 stars makes us easier to find for other sex nerds. You can also go to patreon.com/thedildorks to throw a couple bucks our way. Helps us do rad things like going to conferences. This year we're going to be at Woodhull Sexual Freedom Summit doing a live podcast recording and a panel on storytelling as activism with Kevin Patterson and Dirty Lola, and it's going to be great.
I'm so excited.
So come on out and see us at that.
Thank you so much to Protodome for letting us use his song I Want You in My Bedroom as our theme song. His music is at protodome.bandcamp.com. And thank you to Amy, who did our logo for us. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye.
I'm not an idiot, okay?
I lost you.
What?
Oh my god, you disappeared and reappeared with coffee.
I'm right here. I've been here with coffee the whole time.
The video cut out, so it went back to like showing your face, like the picture. And then it came back and you were holding coffee and I was like, what the fuck? I assume the coffee was off camera, but it looked like magic. So, like, people's language preferences do evolve.
Mm-hmm.
But I... My cat is inside my backpack.
Okay.
Thanks for the update. Language preferences... Yeah. I heard rustling and I turned around and she is head first with just her tail sticking out of my backpack. Just laying, just sleeping like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyway.
That's a look. It's a bold look.
I don't understand. Together we're the Dildorks. We're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram and at thedildorks.com. This week, tweet at us your favorite tip for loving communication. Jesus Christ, what are we even talking about? I'm sorry.
Close enough.
Someone on Twitter with the username ManicPixieFuckboy messaged me, and I was like, I'm putting that in my Tinder bio immediately.
That's so good.
I was like, that is my gender, right there.